कावे सहिता विरम पुरुषोत्तमस्य प्रेमावलोका रुचि स्मिता वल्गु जल्पे स्थैर्यं समानं अहरं मधुमनिनीयम् रुमत्सवो मम यद् अंगीर वितंकिताय कावा सहिता विरम पुरुषोत्तमस्य प्रेमावलोका रुचि स्मिता वल्गु जल्पे स्थैर्यं समानं अहरं मधुमनिनीयम् रुमत्सवो मम यद् अंगीर वितंकिताय काव सहिता विरम पुरुषतमस्य प्रेमावलोका रुचि स्मिता वल्गु चल्पहे स्थैर्यं समानं अहरं मधुमनिनीयम् रोमत्सवो मम यद् अंगीर वितंकिताय का हु वा इद सहिता कैन टॉलरेट विरहम सेपरेशन पुरुषम उत्तयस्य ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड प्रेमा लविंग अवलोका ग्लांसिंग रुचि स्मिता प्लीजिंग स्माइल वल्गु जल्पे Hearty appeals, sthairyam, gravity, samanam, along with passionate wrath. A wrath, conquered, madhu, sweethearts, manani naam, woman such as Satyabhama, Roma Utsava, has standing on end out of pleasure, Mama, mine, yath, whose, angire, feet, vitankitaya, imprinted with. Translation is as follows. Who therefore can tolerate the pangs of separation from that Supreme Personality of Godhead? He could conquer the gravity and passionate wrath of his sweethearts like Satyabhama by his sweet smile of love. Pleasing glance and hearty appeals. When he traversed my earth's surface, I would be immersed in the dust of his lotus feet and thus would be sumptuously covered with grass which appeared like hairs standing on me out of pleasure. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There were chances of separation between the Lord and his thousands of queens because of the Lord's being absent from home. But as far as his connection with earth was concerned, the Lord would traverse the earth with his lotus feet. And therefore, there was no chance of separation. When the Lord left the surface of the earth to return to his spiritual abode, The earth's feeling of separation was therefore more acute. We'll be taking text 36 also. I'll recite the sloka in the translation. Tayor eva katha yotho prithvi dharma yastada parikshin nama raja rishi prapta prachim saraswatim. Translation is as follows. While the earth and the personality of religion were thus engaged in conversation, the saintly king Parikshit reached the shore of the Saraswati river, which flowed towards the east. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. Om Agyanti Dvindasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Mintam Ena Tasmai Shri Kurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Ena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Swapadamitam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Itam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savabhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakamitam Sha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Taruvesha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So all of you all, welcome to the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. So this two slokas which we were reciting and which we are discussing, basically this is a conversation between Mother Earth and the personality of religion, Dharma. These two great devotees of the Lord, they are conversing with each other. And Mother Earth and Dharma personified, they are great devotees of Lord Krishna. And after the earthly leela came to an end of Lord Krishna, and when Lord Krishna went back aboard to his spiritual world, then Mother Earth was feeling deep separation from Lord Krishna. And out of deep separation, Mother Earth is feeling little agony in the heart. Now, from who do we feel separation? Like here, Mother Earth is feeling a lot of separation from Lord Krishna. So who do we generally, with whom do we feel separation? We feel separation only if there is genuine deep love for someone. If you have very deep love for someone, then one can feel deep separation from him. Like in today's world, the relationship which we have in this material world is more of superficial. Sometimes, sometimes we don't gel with someone, maybe in office or something, colleague or in society. So when if that person is coming from that side and we are coming and we happen to see him, either we turn away or that person turns his way, right? And sometimes, if we are not in good terms with someone in the office or somewhere, and if that person is gone for a month somewhere, hum bolte hain, acha hua chutkara mil gaya ek mahina ke liye, for a month at least there is peace of mind to me. So, where the concept of separation in today's world, First of all, there is no concept of true love. If there was true love, then the concept of separation would come. So, and like we are discussing in today's world, the relationships are more superficial, more external. Especially, you see in Hindi movies, a young, dynamic, young hero, action-packed. He's walking on the road and accidentally he bumps into or hits into a young girl, and he falls down. Both fall down. And suddenly this hero sees this young beautiful girl's face and he's just dazzling. He falls in love. God, is this true love? You don't even know that person. Just a minute back, you don't even knew that person existed. And now you're in love with that person. So superficial. No wonder, like, you know, there's a saying, love at first sight. Then some deep people have said, then divorce at first fight, you know. Right? Because today the concept of true love is missing. I'm like, have you heard in some time, have you heard in Hindu movie, you know, this young hero is walking on the road and accidentally hits into a young girl who's not so ugly. And when this hero sees this young ugly girl's face, does that hero fall in love? I've not heard of anyone seeing a movie like that, you know. So you see, so superficial. And especially today, I'm like, when we talk of relationships and talk of marriage, I came across an article, in a news article. One woman, she filed for a divorce in a court. And what was her reason? Her main reason was that my husband does not fight with me, does not quarrel with me, you know. She said, my life is boring. I want it to be adventurous. And honestly, she filed for a divorce. God, what a reason. Since we're talking of, you know, this marriage and relationships, I know of a true case. There was, this around 10 years back, there was a North Indian family and they were a little traditional family. So they arranged a marriage. It was an arranged marriage between the boy and girl. The boy and girl had not seen each other at all. And the marriage was fixed. And since the boy was studying, both the family decided that after 4 years, when he's finished his studies and when he's settled, then both will get married after 4 years. So now the boy and the girl both were not devotees. And after 1 year, after it was announced that they would get married after 4 years. After 1 year, the boy became a devotee. And the girl is not yet a devotee. So the boy is thinking, God, now I'm a devotee. So he rang up this girl and told, Stego, now I become Krishna's devotee. So now we will not talk much, will not interact much. And you should do 16 round japa. So the girl said, Kiska japa karne ka? Whose japa to do? So the boy said, you have to do Hare Krishna Maham japa. And this boy, through voice matches, sent the Hare Krishna Mahamantra to the girl and explained how to do and told the girl that from today you have to do 60 rounds every day. This girl was a little adjusting girl, very rare to find in these worlds these days. She started chanting. And then 1 month passed. Then this boy, when he would ring up this girl and ask, what are you doing? That girl said, I'm doing japa. Afternoon also, when this boy would ring up the girl, what are you doing? I'm doing japa. In the evening also, when this boy would ring up the girl and ask, what are you doing? I'm doing japa. And at night also, when sometimes this boy would ring up this girl, okay, what are you doing? I'm doing japa. So this happened for 4 months. Whenever this boy would call up this girl would ring japa. So this one day, after 4 months, this boy asked the girl, whenever I ring you up, whether it's morning, evening, night, you're always doing japa. Din bhar japa karti hai kya? Whole day you're doing japa, what? Yes, what to do? Whole time doing japa. What? Your 16 rounds don't get over. The girl said, I thought you told me on the first day to do 60 rounds. The girl, by mistake, heard 60 rounds instead of 16. Imagine, from the first day, this girl was doing what? 60 rounds. After 4 months, this boy came to know, point to say, 60 nahi, 60 nahi, 16 karne ka. It was a relief for that girl, you know. Imagine, my hats off to this girl. From first day, 60 rounds, you know. Way after doing 15, 20, 30 years of spiritual life, you could maybe count on her fingers, maybe 5 or 6 or 3 times, you may have done 60 rounds, you know, above 60. But this girl, since 4 months, every day she was doing 60 rounds. Now, the thing is, in relationships, it's very important to adjust, quality of adjustment. This girl, somehow she adjusted, and now, both are very seasoned devotees and they're happily married. They have a daughter who's 8 years old and they're very happy. But the thing is, girl, if there was a modern type girl, she was First day when she heard solo wala japa, theek hai abhi 16 din mein divorce kar deta hu. You know. But the thing is, she was very adjusting, she adjusted, and now they are a very happy family. So a lot of times in a relationship, if you show this quality of adjustment, adjustment is not an end in itself in Krishna consciousness. But we can use this quality of adjustment as a tool to progress in our Krishna conscious relationships. And real love means establishing and seeing the spiritual connection among each other and caring for each other from that perspective. But that does not mean we ignore the physical, emotional needs of the other person. Definitely. General love comes when we see each other from the spiritual connection, as a spiritual living entity. And when we see that spiritual connection among each other, then there can be genuine love. But in relationship, we also have to take care of the other person's physical, emotional, financial needs also. And when we genuinely love someone, and when there is separation, then there's this concept of love in separation. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us how to love Krishna in this mode of separation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught it very deeply. And if you study the six Goswamis, the lifestyle, the six Goswamis, they would go around Vraj expressing this love in separation for Lord Krishna and Radharani. And in this material world, when you talk of love and separation, you know, when two people are in love and suddenly, you know, so one partner leaves the other partner. So in that separation, you know what happens? The other person, he becomes agony. There's distress. There's grief. And that grief sometimes, a lot of times leads to, you know, people taking up to alcohol, drinking alcohol, taking, you know, going into depression, going to psychiatric disorders. This is what separation in modern world causes. But when you genuinely love Krishna, then you love his devotees. And if there's separation, that separation causes grief. Like for example, if you take the example of the gopis love Krishna more than their life. And when the gopis, they could not see Krishna, it was grief in them. It caused grief in their heart. But this grief is actually spiritual ecstasy. You tell this to a non-devotee, it will go above his head. He will not understand the head or the tails of this concept. And this type of spiritual feeling, this type of deep spiritual love, how does it come about? It will not come out just by itself. We have to put effort towards it. It is achievable when we associate with devotees, when we chant sincerely around every day, when we follow this process of devotional service very deeply, very sincerely, then we also can get this deep feeling of love for Lord Krishna. In the beginning stage of our bhakti, we may not have love, but the intent to love, that intent is what Krishna sees. Definitely, when we come in the beginning, we may not have that deep love for Krishna, but at least we can show our intent to have that deep love for Krishna. This is what Krishna sees. But then, this intent should be followed with action. Khali intent, you know. If we genuinely had serious intent, it will be followed with action. What action? Action want to love Krishna. Action again, to read our scriptures every day, to associate with devotees, to do our japa very sincerely every day. Basically, we have to be endeavoring every moment, striving every moment to love Krishna. It is not that, you know, because Maya is so powerful. It is not that, chalo, I have endeavored for the last few minutes. I have endeavored for the last few hours. I have endeavored for the last few days. I have endeavored for the last few weeks. I have endeavored for the last few months. I have endeavored for the last few years. Now I can take a break for a few minutes. No.
We have to endeavor every moment in Krishna consciousness. Because Maya is so, so powerful. Even a moment of inattentiveness, Maya humko aisa phek dega. We didn't know where we had stood first itself. Maya will throw us, you know, so far that we'll forget where we were standing in spiritual life. See, spiritual life is like a razor edge. Even a moment of inattentiveness, it will cause bleeding. That does not mean, arey bhai, razor edge, no, I will not come to bhakti at all. That's not an answer. Because if you don't come to bhakti, you don't take to the bhakti process, misery is the only other answer, only other alternative. See, if you continue the path of bhakti, the rewards are immense. It's beyond the world. We'll be transported back to the spiritual abode, to the abode of Lord Krishna. You know, that is what the result of bhakti will give us. But yet, we have to understand, even a moments of inattentiveness, there will be blood. So every moment we have to be praying to Krishna. We have to beg the Vaishnavas. Always remember the Krishna that, my dear Lord, please at every moment engage me in your devotional service. Please keep my consciousness protected. We have to always pray to Lord Krishna for this shelter and protection. Now, even if we a moment's inattentiveness, even if we are with Krishna, it can cause havoc in our spiritual life. Why? Because each living entity, Krishna has given each living entity a free will. So even if we are with Krishna, we cannot afford to be inattentive for even a moment. There's this classic example in Chaitanya Leela. Kal Krishna Das, he was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal servant. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking his South India tour, Kal Krishna Das was only with Krishna, only with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and serving him wherever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went. Imagine he was with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when they were going particular area, they came across a gypsy tribe called the Bhattaharis. And some of the girls of the Bhattaharis, they allured and tempted Kal Krishna Das. And Kal Krishna Das left Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association and went with the Bhattahari woman. Imagine. So again, from the story, we should understand the power of Maya. Maya is supreme, supremely power. There's only one thing that can counter it. That is the process of bhakti. That is when we take shelter of Lord Krishna. In that shelter only, we can be immune to the power of Maya. So every moment we have to be begging Krishna, that my dear Lord, please keep me under your protection, under your shelter. And Mother Earth, like we were discussing in these two slokas, Mother Earth was remembering that Krishna would walk on a surface and she would be immense. She would be immersed in the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. Mother Earth was always remembering the lotus feet of the Lord Krishna. Krishna has various marks on his lotus feet. He has different set of marks on his right feet and different set of marks on his left feet. On his right feet, on his right foot, Krishna has the mark of barley corn, chakra, uddhavrekha, lotus, goat, flag, umbrella, vraja, four swastikas, four jaman fruits, and ashtakon. And on Krishna's left foot, there is the mark of akash, conch, unstrung bow, cow's hoof, four water pots, triangle, ardha chandra, and fish. And Krishna's lotus feet, whenever Krishna would walk on Vrindavan, he would walk barefoot when he was small and would leave these footprints everywhere on Braj. And for the Brijvasis, one of the greatest treasure for them was the footprints of Krishna. The greatest treasure. Whenever the Brijvasis would walk and whenever they saw a footprint with these marks, they would bow their heads to that footprint and they would not step on it. They would, with awe and reverence, with a lot of love, they would just go side of it. Imagine the consciousness of the Brajvasis. They're just immense in Krishna's thought. They would be thinking of Krishna's Leela, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's foot, Krishna's footprint. They had the greatest treasure of the whole creation in their heart. And when you're talking of Krishna's footprints,
There's this, I'm like, when Akrurji, he was coming and he was coming to take Krishna from Vrindavan. And he was on his chariot. And when Akrurji, as he was approaching Vrindavan, from his chariot, he saw these footprints of Lord Krishna. As he saw the footprints of Lord Krishna, he immediately stopped his chariot. He got down from his chariot and he rolled in the dust. Akrurji, he was from a very aristocratic, noble family. But he didn't care about that. You know, what will people think? We sing with all this crown and this all opulent dress. Nothing. He saw Krishna's footprint. That was the greatest treasure he could find. He immediately got down and started rolling in that dust. This is the consciousness of a Vaishnava. Vaishnava sees, you know, I'm like, for us, okay, when we go to Vrindavan, I'm like, you should understand that this Vrindavan is the place where Krishna has walked. It is the dust of Krishna's, you know, lotus feet. Yeah? We should also roll in the dust of Vrindavan. Then, when you're talking of the lotus feet of Krishna, I will read to you some quotes about Krishna's lotus feet. In Nectar of Devotion, in chapter 32, it is mentioned, in the Mukund Mala Stotra, compiled by King Kulashekhara, one of the prayers by him is that, my dear Lord, you are the deliverer of living entities from the hellish condition of materialistic life. But that does not matter to me whether I am elevated to the heavenly platform or remain on this earthly planet or am dispatched to some hellish planet. That does not matter at all to me. My only prayer is that at the time of my death, I may simply remember your two beautiful feet, which are just like lotus flowers, fructifying during the autumn season. Then another quote, this is from Nectar of Devotion, chapter 37. An expression of disappointment was made by Indra, the king of heaven. When he saw the sun god, Indra told him, my dear sun god, your shine is very glorious, because it reaches onto the lotus feet of Krishna, the master of the Yadu dynasty. I have thousands of eyes, but they have proved to be useless because not even for a moment they able to see the lotus feet of the Lord. Then in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, Text 29, it is mentioned. Lord Shiva said, my dear Lord, my mind and consciousness are always fixed on your lotus feet, which are the source of all benediction and the fulfillment of all desires and are worshipped by all liberated great sages because your lotus feet are worthy of worship. Then in teachings of Kunkvinti, it is mentioned. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Then in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, in verse 10, it is written, another significant point is that Lord Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is described here as Tirthapad. Tirtha means sanctified place. And Pad means the lotus feet of the Lord. People go to sanctified place to free themselves from all sinful reactions. In other words, those who are devoted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, automatically becomes sanctified. Then, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 21, it is mentioned, King Kulashekhara, a great devotee of the Lord, prayed, my Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of the lotus feet of your Lordship and be locked up in the network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? Then, in Srimad Bhagavatam, again, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 1, it is written, the whole Vedic adventure is to draw one's attention entirely onto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna without any diversion. And lastly, in Srimad Bhagavatam, again, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 32, it is mentioned, to attain the lotus feet of Lord Krishna is the perfection of life and the highest goal. But Lord Krishna is not willing to give service to his lotus feet to anyone. If one wishes to attain the service of the Lord's lotus feet, he must first approach and render service to Lord Krishna's devotee. Then it will be very easy to get service to Krishna's lotus feet. There's so many, passages and glories about the Lord's lotus feet. Then, above the earth are the higher earthly planetary systems. And in the higher planetary systems, the people who stay in these higher planetary systems, they are more beautiful than the people on the earth. Their intelligence is much more higher than the people on planet earth. Even the physical beauty of the earthly planets are much, much more than the beauty of earthly planets. But still, the earth planet is considered one of the most fortunate among all the planets. Why? Because it is on this planet earth where Lord has manifested Vrindavan. And it is the place in Vrindavan where the Lord has left the dust of his lotus feet. And the Lord has done very much, a lot of sweet pastimes in the planet earth. In his Vrindavan, Gokul, Barsana. And in the heavenly planets, why? Even in the heavenly planets, there's no manifestation of Vrindavan. It is only on this earthly planet that the Lord has manifested Vrindavan. So the earth considers itself very, very fortunate. Then, in today's times, people are so attached to many things. People attached to their dress, to their sari, to their phones. Sometimes people say, I have fallen in love with my dress. I have fallen in love with my jewelry. I have fallen in love with my dog. God, is your dress, is your dog, is your jewelry to something to fall in love with? Is human life meant to fall in love with your dog, fall in love with your dress? Just see what level in Kali Yuga we have come up to. If you fall in love, with a dress, with a jewelry, we have wasted our human life. Our human life is meant for only one purpose, and that is to love Krishna, to serve Krishna. That is the only, reason for the human birth. There was in the news once that there was this one very rich person. He loved his dog so much, And when his dog died, he went into grief. He went to grief for 3 days. For 3 days, he told his office secretary, I'm not coming to office. He was just in his home, just remembering his dog and in grief. Thank God, he did not die in those 3 days. Otherwise, we know what destiny he would have gone. He was a little fortunate, he didn't die in those 3 days. But imagine, is human life meant for such actions, such things? And real spiritual love means 100% thinking of other person's benefit and zero for ourselves. The gopis showed this. They love Krishna not 99%, full 100%. There was no selfish thing for even 0.001%. Full 100% they love Krishna. And if we genuinely love someone, we have to show detachment in life. And we also have to be willing to take risk also. For example, you see the lives of the gopis. When Krishna in the night, he played a flute in the forest. The gopis, whatever they were doing, the gopis just dropped that. When the gopis with the husband, with the child, with the in-laws, they just dropped that and left and went to the forest to meet Krishna.
they took that bold step. They took that risk. And obviously the gopis knew that after meeting Krishna, when they come back, and the in-laws and the husband, they go holding, no, you cannot go out, cannot go out. But there was no stopping of the gopis. The gopis were bold. They just left everything and went to meet Krishna. And when they went to meet Krishna, obviously the gopis knew that when they come back again, you know, the in-laws and their husband, wife, they'll be shouting, they will be kicked out of the house, and you know, there will be so many things negative. But they did not care for those repercussions. And when they took that risk, that boldness, and they came to Krishna, and Krishna rewarded them, you know, Krishna danced with them, Krishna gave them such high spiritual emotions, Krishna did rasa dance with them. And then Krishna told them in the end that please go back to your home. And gopis were looking at each other, now what do we do? Go back home. I'm like, but then fine. They obeyed Krishna. When they went home, the in-laws and everyone, they behaved as if nothing had happened. This was a miracle which Krishna did. Obviously, the gopis did not know that Krishna would do that. They took that risk thinking that, you know, we'll be really chastised and hell will come upon us, you know. But they took that risk, they took that boldness, and when they went back, Krishna not only rewarded them spiritually, but materially also. Krishna just removed, you know, Krishna just made their in-laws and home people just behave normally, that nothing has happened. So in the same way, in our spiritual life also, we have to take such risk. We have to show such detachment. We have to show such boldness. What happens is, initially when we come in Krishna consciousness, you know, we have our, we had a particular society, we had particular friends in college, our society, our business, and we start become spiritually. Sometimes we are a little reluctant to put kanti mala also. We feel like, if I put kanti mala, what will my friends say? What will my colleagues say? We are a little hesitant. Yeah? We are a little hesitant to declare to our friends that, you know, maybe Hare Krishna wala ban gaya, you know. We are declared boldly. Yeah? Because we have to understand one thing. The ways of this material world, the ways of Krishna consciousness are two poles apart. We cannot have one leg in material life and one leg in spiritual life. If we do this, we'll be the most miserable species. Because, you know, we'll never, if you really want to experience spiritual bliss, we have to give the glitters, we have to give the accepted material norms of this society, and we have to take a full, with full heart, the full process of Krishna consciousness. In modern times also, you know, when we're talking of taking risks, in modern times, Indradumna Maharaj, who is Srila Prabhupada's senior sannyasa disciple, many, many years back, this maybe 25, 30 years plus, he wanted to give Krishna consciousness to, in the Amazon area. You know, the Amazon area is, you know, it's cut off from the world in one sense, you know. You can't go by aeroplane, you can't go by helicopter, you can't go by road, anything. You have to just go by boats. It's a very dangerous place. There the people live like, you know, like how in the primitive way they live. There's no law and order. There's no modern influence there. That time at least. I don't know what's now. So Indradumna Maharaj, he knew, you know, there was a lot of risk involved to go there and preach. Very dangerous animals, dangerous snakes, you know. Which, you know, and sometimes Indradumna Maharaj, he went for many days in the Amazon preaching in very many villages. And whenever he would approach some villages, he had a boat, a little big boat which was given by the governor of that area. It had various rooms. And when this boat would approach some of the villages, and when Indradumna Maharaj with the devotees would go to the villages, the people, they would be hiding behind trees, saying, "Ye kon log aa rahe? Who are these people?" You know, very suspicious eyes. And Indradumna Maharaj and the devotees, they would also not know what will happen to them when they go. Because, you know, there's no police there, there's no government there to protect. But Indradumna Maharaj took that risk to preach Krishna consciousness to that whole area. And once Indradumna Maharaj fell very sick, it was a many days trip, he got dysentery. He had a high fever, he had become thin, he had rashes on his body. And the captain of that boat, his wife was also there. His wife had some medical knowledge. His wife told Indradumna and the devotees, "If we don't get you treated, the next 3 days you will die." So devotees, no, to go back to a big hospital is very far off. They were anxiety what to do. Then they carried Indradyumna Maharaj, you know, on a mattress. Indradyumna Maharaj was so sick. He was losing consciousness, gaining consciousness. You know, he was so sick. They carried him on a mattress to a village jungle doctor because, you know, that was the nearest medical relief available. They had to carry Indradyumna Maharaj on a mattress to this doctor, and Maharaj was having high fever. He was gaining consciousness, losing consciousness. So when this village doctor saw Indradyumna Maharaj, he said, "No problem, I will cure him." He made some potion, you know, and he bought it. And he told him, "Now you eat it." And when Indradyumna Maharaj smelt it, he said it was the most obnoxious smell in the whole creation, you know. But he said, "Maharaj, please have it, you know, we want your life." Then Maharaj ate that. Then Maharaj did that, and for 2 hours he went to sleep. And when he got up after 2 hours, he, you know, his fever gone, his weakness gone. Maharaj writes in his traveling teacher's diary that I felt like a 16-year-old boy ready for a football match, you know, and his fever, everything gone. This type of risk Indradyumna Maharaj took. And when Indradyumna Maharaj later after the Amazon trip, when he went to a big city and for some checkup, and he was talking to that doctor, and he told that doctor had got this symptom, and this is, the doctor identified he had got this disease. And the doctor said, to cure this, it would take you many, many weeks. And when Indradyumna Maharaj told that doctor, you know, that I took that potion and within few hours I was cured. The doctor looked at Indradyumna Maharaj and said, don't tell me fairy tales, you know. Don't talk to a doctor like this, you know. So, again, the thing is, Indradyumna Maharaj took those risks, and, you know, and the type of touchstone which Indradyumna Maharaj is. Okay. So, today is again a very, very auspicious day. It is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, we will discuss some things on him. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was the fifth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And when he was 4 years, around 4 to 5 years old, there was some mango in his house. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had those mangoes. And after having the mango, he came to know that they were not offered. So he felt a little bad. And he was just a 4 or 5 year old child. He took a vow that time that for the rest of my life, I will never have mango. Because he felt bad that, you know, he didn't do it out of purpose. So when he came to know that the mangoes which I had heard, it was not offered. So he felt bad and he took a vow that for the rest of my life, I will never have mangoes. The determination. And he lived up to this vow till the end of his life. Whenever in future someone bought him mangoes, when he was a guru, worldwide figure, and when people bought him mangoes who did not know about this, then he would just fold his hand and he would just say that actually I am an offender at the lotus feet of my Gurudev. And he would very politely refuse to have those mangoes. Then he was a very staunch brahmachari. In fact, he had started a club called the August Assembly Club. And only those people who could become members of this club who took vows that for lifelong they will remain a celibacy. Only such people would be allowed to become members of this club. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was the only disciple of his Gurudev, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. He was the only disciple. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was such a scholar. He was a very big scholar. And for his classes, his own Gurudev would come and sit for his classes. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was known for very strict principles, to uphold the principles of the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He could not tolerate any deviation from the principles of the Shastras. He would be very bold. He was known as Narsimha Guru, Lion Guru. He was so fierce that, you know, the so-called people who thought themselves religions, who were not actually genuinely followers of the spiritual Sanatana Dharma, they would be talking negative about him. And even some people, they got together and they offered a policeman in those days 25,000 rupees to kill Bhakti Siddhanta's Thakur. Imagine, in those days, they offered, but somehow this policeman who, you know, who the contract was given, or so-called, this policeman, he knew Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, and he knew that this person is a genuine saint, genuine sage. And this policeman went to Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur and told him, see, people are ready to pay me 25,000 rupees just to kill you. Please be careful of yourself. Please take care of yourself. And when Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, when he was born, he was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around him like a Brahmin thread. And when Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he was the leader of his math, he was Acharya. And when a new Brahmachari would join the ashram, and sometimes when the new Brahmachari would go out for preaching, then sometimes Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur himself would pack prasad with his own hand, and he would give to that new Brahmachari and say that when you go out and preaching, if you get delayed, you can please honor prasadam, you know, on the way. He was so careful, so sensitive. And whenever, if any devotee left the ashram, if any Brahmachari left the ashram, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur would take the full responsibility on himself. He would tell himself, and he would feel that, actually, I did not give enough love to this Brahmachari. Actually, I am responsible. I did not care. I did not give enough love to this Brahmachari. That's why he left it. I mean, again, this shows the humility of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. And there was once a person with a long beard. And he came to Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur and told Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur that, I want to take diksha from you. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur told him that, okay, you'll have to first remove your beard and come. But that person, he was very attached to his beard. He gave various reasons that why I can't remove my beard. And he went away. So one day that person was cycling and he fell down and his beard got entangled in the cycle, you know, in the wheel, you know, and it could not come out. So people had to cut his beard, you know, to get him out of the entanglement. And then when he lost his beard, then after that he came to Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur and surrendered to Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. Then on one occasion, one devotee, he was going out of India by ship. He had booked his tickets on a ship and he was going by sea to the other country. So when Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur came to know, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur told this devotee that, you please cancel your ticket on this ship and don't go by this ship, go by the next ship. So this devotee didn't understand why his Gurudev is saying that, but he understood. He cancelled and he took a ticket for the next ship. And he went on the next ship. And when he reached to the other country on the ship, he came to know that the previous ship on which he was supposed to travel, it sank in the middle of the ocean and all the people had died. Then, a new devotee had joined the temple. And he didn't have soap. So he went around knocking at different doors of the ashram, you know, requesting people for soap, you know. So on one door when he knocked, and when the door opened, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur himself was standing. So this devotee didn't expect, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur to be there. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur asked him, yes, sir, what can I do for you? So he told, actually I'm looking for soap, you know, I cannot find the soap. I'm looking to somebody who can give me a soap. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he called a senior devotee and he told him that, please, he doesn't have a soap, please give him a soap. So that senior devotee started walking with this new Brahmachari, and this senior devotee was about to chastise this Brahmachari. Then Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur from behind told that senior devotee, please do not chastise him. Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur knew that, you know, this senior devotee is going to chastise him. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur was falling behind. And as the senior devotee was about to chastise this new Brahmachari, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur told the senior devotee, no, please don't chastise him. He's new in the ashram. He doesn't know many things. We have to take care of him. We have to give him love and care. So please don't chastise him. Again, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur was so sensitive, so caring. So today on the auspicious day of the appearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, should pray to him that please give us even a drop of the bhakti which you have. And we should pray very, very sincerely to him today. And I will end with a story. Like in the middle, we were discussing that, you know, this earth planet is very, very special. Because Krishna has done many, many wonderful sweet leelas here. One very sweet leela is there. That once, we know about the Damodar leela. Mother Yashoda had bound Krishna with ropes. So, Mother Yashoda bound in the end Krishna with ropes. And then Mother Yashoda went in the kitchen to do her work. Then when Balramji comes there, he sees Krishna tied up. Balramji becomes very angry. He tells Krishna, who did this to you? You know, Balramji was very angry. So, Krishna told, Mother Yashoda did this to me. So when Balramji came to know Mother Yashoda's name, then Balramji's anger came little down. He said, Acha, Mother Yashoda did this to you? Okay, I will go and talk to Mother Yashoda. So, Balramji goes to the kitchen and tells Mother Yashoda that, Mother Yashoda, what that you tied Krishna, that's not good you have done. By tying Krishna, you have not done a good thing. Do you know who Krishna is? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All avatars like Lord Vara, Lord Nasima, Lord Rama, they all come from Lord Krishna. You should not have tied him. So, when Mother Yashoda heard this, so Mother Yashoda, she was doing her work, she stopped that. And she turned around to Balramji. Acha, and who are you? The Balram says, I am the first incarnation of Lord Krishna. Acha, so Mother Yashoda picked up a stick and told Balramji, all avatars had to take birth in my house? Huh? You better run away from me, otherwise I'll tie you also up. So when Balramji heard this, Balramji got scared and Balramji ran away from there. Then Balramji went to Mother Yashoda and, Balramji went to Krishna and told Krishna, see Krishna, I tried my best to talk for you, but if I tried furthermore, I would have landed up tied like you. So I can't do much for you. Now you take care of yourself. I'm going away. So these are the sweet pastimes, you know, of Vrindavan, of Lord Krishna. So time is up. So we will end here. I will not take any questions because the time is already up. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Swami Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.